The nation was soon swimming in a sea of alphabet soup. Always as a partner with his radio listener, Roosevelt created the AAA, that's the Agricultural Adjustment Act, the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, and the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, saving the countryside and creating jobs. In speeches in May 1933 and September 1934, he set up a national industrial recovery program which made the government the protector of workers' rights.
On a Sunday night, a week after my inauguration, I used the radio to tell you about the banking crisis and about the measures we were taking to meet it. Tonight, 8 weeks later, I come for the second time to give you my report in the same spirit and by the same means to tell you about what we have been doing and what we are planning to do. The legislation that has been passed or is in the process of enactment can properly be considered as part of a well-rounded plan. First, we are giving opportunity of employment to 250,000 of the unemployed, especially the young men who have dependents. Let them go into forestry and flood prevention work. That is a big task because it means feeding and clothing and caring for nearly twice as many men as we have in the regular army itself. And in creating this Civilian Conservation Corps, we are killing two birds with one stone. We are clearly enhancing the value of our natural resources, and at the same time, we are relieving an appreciable amount of actual distress. Secondly, I have requested the Congress and have secured action upon a proposal to put the great properties owned by our government at Muscle Shoals to work after long years of wasteful inaction. And with this, goes hand in hand a broad plan for the permanent improvement of the vast area included in the whole of the Tennessee Valley. It will add to the comfort and to the happiness of hundreds of thousands of people, and the incident benefits will reach the entire nation. The farm relief bill seeks by the use of several methods, alone or together, to bring about an increased return to farmers for their major farm products, seeking at the same time to prevent in the days to come disastrous overproduction, the kind of overproduction that so often in the past has kept farm commodity prices far below a reasonable return. The people of this country have been erroneously encouraged to believe that they could keep on increasing the output of farm and of factory indefinitely, and that some magician would find ways and means for that increased output to be consumed with reasonable profit to the producer. Take, for instance, the cotton goods industry. It is probably true that 90% of the cotton manufacturers of this country would agree tomorrow to eliminate starvation wages, would agree to stop long hours of employment, would agree to stop child labor, would agree to prevent an overproduction that would result in unsaleable surpluses. But, my friends, what good is such an agreement of the 90%? If the other 10% of the cotton manufacturers pay starvation wages and require long hours and employ children in their mills and turn out burdensome surpluses, the unfair 10% could produce goods so cheaply that the fair 90% would be compelled to meet the unfair conditions. And that is where government comes in. Government ought to have the right and will have the right, after surveying and planning for an industry, to prevent, with the assistance of the overwhelming majority of that industry, all unfair practices, and to enforce that agreement by the authority of government. I do not deny that we may make some mistakes of procedure as we carry out this policy. I have no expectation of making a hit every time I come to bat. What I seek is the highest possible batting average, not only for myself, but for the team.